none of you need a lesson on running good butcher shops, and I won't be trying to do that. I know I wasn't either. My story is farmer's son. Again, had brothers on the farm with me, small farm. So my dad encouraged me to go learn my trade, a lot of synergies. And I got a Santa job, eventually began on my own, and realised quite quickly that a small village shop wasn't going to be enough to sustain a future, so looked at ways of growing that. So this is the bit of the story today. So the small dairy farm in 1967 where I grew up. My grandfather built that house. My dad was born in it in 1930. My grandfather had come home from the war, and his brothers and him went to America, made enough money as joiners and builders to come back and buy this small plot, built the house, and my dad became the first farmer and milked 100 cows. He knew about hard work. This is the dung bin on the left hand side. The cows walked in, were milked, and my dad often told the story of we would say we're working hard. He said, "I'll show you hard work." 1957 till 1968, he didn't have a day off. So that was the kind of working family we were. I opened my small shop in Dunning. My mum had bought this shop from the co-op for £2,400 when I was 12, and I was serving my apprenticeship in Perth in Rattray the Butchers. And very unfortunately, my boss died when I was 19, and I decided I would open the wee shop in the village that my mum had bought. I had £2,500 in the bank and fitted it out, bought some second-hand equipment, the usual story. You can all tell the same story, I'm sure, and away we went. I realised that in the shop there wasn't going to be enough to do just supplying a village with 1,000 people, so we went and knocked on doors of pubs and hotels and trying to get a job of sending our little unrefrigerated van round with meat to supply them, and that happened. So we got some of our local restaurants and hotels and grew the business from there, took on first member of staff in May 1987. He's still with us today, Jimmy Park. The big one for us locally was Glen Eagles Hotel. We knocked on the door and were of course told that they had incumbent suppliers and didn't need another one. But one night I was walking up the road to the farm from my shop, and there was a chap trying to get his wheel off his car because he got a puncture, 6:30 in the evening, and he was panicking. So I went up to the farm. He'd won this car in a raffle, in a competition. It was a brand new Ford Orion, and it had early days of locking wheel nuts, and he couldn't get it off. I went up to the farm, got what you call a Marlin spike, got down, got this wheel nut off, and it turns out he was the new head chef at Glen Eagles. And I called him a week later, and we supplied them with meat for the last 30 years because of that event. And it really did make it. There was a number of these things that happened in my story, and that was a turning point for us. Glen Eagles had 37 chefs. They moved on from there to Turnberry, the Old Course, Glasgow Hilton. In fact, James Murphy, who's the chef here tonight, or today, was a chef in the Hilton in Glasgow, and these guys all moved around and took us with them, and that really helped us grow our business. Another turning point for me was this guy, Gary Conacher, who came 20 years ago this year to the business, and he ran a retail business. He was a butcher in Dundee. Some of you will know Gary, and he's been really an inspirational guy and very hardworking and made a massive difference. So between Gary and I, we've worked hard at developing the business and taking it forward. 1996, I bought the shop in Perth that I'd served my apprenticeship in. This is the Perth shop here, and in 1999, we gave it its first refurbishment. These were the guys, most of them, pretty much all of them, are still with us today. And that shop went forward to Topshop 2000, so we were very pleased to have won that accolade and felt very good about the progress for the future. In 2002, we worked hard on our branding, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go forward today. This was our second refurbishment in the shop, and we went on and we won That shop's won 5 times Best Butcher Shop in Scotland and once it's Best Butcher Shop in Britain. Our Ochterarder shop had a refit in 1996. My idea of having a butcher shop in the village and supplying hotels and restaurants, I then bought the Dunkeld shop, started to supply hotels around there, and then Ochterarder, and of course the Perth shop. Eventually we've worked back down to 2 shops and built a factory, which we'll talk about the shop. So this was the Ochterarder refit, which we did 10 years ago. And this is the 2006 Best Butcher Shop in Britain. So 2008, we decided that we'd give the Perth shop another refit. So one Saturday night, talking about refurbishments, we closed at 4 and by 6 o'clock, this was us ripping the shop out. And that big lad with the white shirt there, you see him with the red boiler suit on, this was 11 o'clock on the Saturday night. And by Sunday lunchtime, we had new floors, a whole series of steelwork in, and we were starting the fit out. And by the following Friday morning, we were back open, up and running, and very pleased with the fit out, and that's the shop as it is today. My other big event that happened in my life was my guy and I was involved in getting to know the supermarkets in the late 90s through what they call the Supplier Development Programme. Scottish Enterprise ran that. And they said, come on all you small businesses, we'll tell you what it's like to deal with the supermarkets. And kind of reluctantly, I went along thinking it would be a complete waste of time. They assigned a person to each business and said, we'll mentor you through this programme, and at the end we'll have a wee dinner like this, and we'll see where we go from there. Well, at that dinner, I was sitting in the Bonham Hotel in Edinburgh with Stuart Mitchell, who was the chairman of the chief executive of Sainsbury's, and Sir Peter Davis, who was the chairman. He was the man from the Prue, if any of you remember him. And they said, they were very humble guys, very nice people, and they said, thank you for being part of our programme. What a wonderful bunch of suppliers all you people are. And they were very nice to us. We've got a big problem with our counters. And I rather arrogantly said, yes, I think they're the worst in the whole sector. And they said, we agree. You were absolutely right, and that's why we're mentioning it. What would you do about it, Smarty Pants? And I said, well, come up to my Perth shop and have a look at what city retailers can do and maybe take something out of that. So to their credit, they came up to Edinburgh the following Saturday. I picked them up in my Peugeot 405 at Edinburgh Airport and took them to the Perth shop. And within 15 minutes, they said, right, you take all the Sainsbury stores and brand them up as yours. You can have full autonomy. So we did that. And that was a big turning point for the business. So all the Sainsbury stores, 21 stores in Scotland, were branded like this. You'll see the significant date. I was standing behind that counter in Edinburgh when the planes hit the towers. That was September 2001, 9/11. It was a great time for the business and really helped us because that gave us the credibility. In fact, to this day, people still say to us when we're not, oh, I know you have the counters in Sainsbury's. But we haven't actually for about the last 8 or 9 years since Justin King took over. We supply a lot of the products into the counters, but they're not branded as ours. But that was a massive thing for the business. We went from, well, you can imagine, that was doing £50,000 a week just into these stores. So, but prior to that, our idea of having the shops was beginning to become flawed because controlling it, and you can imagine trying to run hotel supplies from different shops in different areas was getting difficult. And then there was obviously the food issue in Lanarkshire. So butchers were going to become licensed as we are. So I bought the next door neighbouring farm, my wife and I did, and we started the job of refurbishing the house, and we built a factory, which is the top part of the picture there. And this was our agricultural shed nearest us. So that was 1996. We then began to put raw, cooked and manufacturing. So there's three disciplines happening within the factory. What you would expect in our butcher shops was happening. Then we had a kitchen area, and then we had an area where, as we say, anything goes through a mincer, so sausages, burgers and puddings. So that, these were the main disciplines in the factory. This was the factory opened in 97, which again was really the reason, going backwards, to why we had gone into Sainsbury's and started thinking about the supermarkets as a growth area. So by 2002, we had added on, essentially split the factory from one thing with everything in it into raw on the bottom, and then cooked on the left and manufacturing on the right. We then added on a packaging store and a cold storage at the back area of the farm. So we were up to 60,000 square feet at this point. And here we are in 2017, we've added on an area at the back of the factory here. You can see our engineering shed with our van storage, and obviously where we do our repairs, and a new cold store at the back end where we can hold 400 pallets of frozen goods ready for the peak times. And new offices down at the front end. We've put 150 kilowatts of solar power on the roof, and we have a borehole where we take 50 cubic meters of water a day out, and we take that through the factory and treat it on site. That's the back area, and you can see the village of Dunning in Perthshire to the north of the factory. We have a Himalayan salt wall for dry aging our sirloins and our ribs. That's been quite a new thing for the business, and really helping us to try and give a point of difference to some of our hotel customers. You've seen the inside of factories before, but ours is no different. Shiny white walls, clean floors, and lots of expensive bits of metal moving meat around. This is our new pudding room, which we're very pleased to have built on. I spoke to you about raw, cooked and manufacturing. Well, we've taken our manufacturing and split that into sausages and burgers, and we've taken the puddings out and built this pudding room here, which, if Douglas's technology works, we'll take a wee walk through that for a second. So this is tonight, Matthew. So we've got blast chills and cookers on the right here. This is our boxing machine for the wee black puddings and haggis. So up at the top end, we've chills on the right hand side where the meat comes through. Then we've got mixers and grinders and flakers at the top end here. These are the ovens and the blast chills. And we've got three lines producing 15 tons of black pudding and haggis a day. Out here we can do in the region 25,000 haggis a day into the cookers. Nothing that you haven't seen before, but maybe just slightly bigger scale. And we've 18 trolleys cooking and cooling at any one time. So this pudding room has really helped keep the, we'll call it the slightly more messy stuff, out of the rest of the factory. And we've got obviously all the bits and pieces of traceability that keep us right. And personally, I don't have a problem with all the regs, as long as we keep on top of them. I think in a way they keep the less scrupulous people out of our hair. This is a machine that puts the pudding into the box, makes the box, prints the date, and then the boys put it into the pack. Previously, up till a year ago, we did that by hand, and they took these four people are doing what probably, well, five people would have taken three times as long to do. So it's really speeded things. We're putting those in at a rate of 60 a minute, whereas we're probably more like 10 a minute previously with the same people. So you can see the inside of the factory. We have a blue floor that splits the different disciplines. So as you walk through, you have this factory on the left is cooked, and this factory on the right is manufacturing. The one behind you, if you were looking at the picture, is raw. So you can walk through this, and as long as you're standing on a blue floor, you don't need a white coat or anything on. Our wetlands, our little story here, these cells that you see in the ground are wetland cells. So all our water comes through the factory. We pump from the trees here up to the top. There's a dot just at the nearest us inside the six cells, and all our water gets treated down through those cells through an ecological system down to a wetland scrape at the bottom, so we don't discharge any water from site. So we've no wastewater charges, and I know you all be a bugbear for you that a percentage of your business rates are charged as wastewater charges. Well, we don't have that. So we've worked hard not only at trying to keep our prices up and keep our cost prices of our meat down, but also controlling our overheads has been a big part of how we've run the business. It hasn't been a bad thing that we've had a farmland to grow into rather than having to buy industrial land, but we do pay for it in other ways. We're 10 miles away from the nearest city, so we're always on the road somewhere. We have a food trailer. Ross, my son here, uses this through different festivals and a number of these things, so we go around different events. Branding's been an important part for us. This is a unashamedly money-making enterprise rather than just branding. So Ross takes this round to different shows. We go to festivals and Highland shows and agricultural shows. I'm very pleased with that. The Highland show, we would feed 6,000-7,000 meals over 4 days. So a really important part of the business for us in the agricultural community. Just very quickly on branding, you know, everything that Hein was saying is absolutely spot on. It's important that not only if the products are good, that they look good. So we've tried to mix our branding up and taking our local heritage, Dunning, Scotland, and a number of these things, and we've got a local artist to sketch things up. We've been pretty tight with our money, believe it or not, and haven't thrown too much around. We've done a few adverts and the likes, but like yourself, struggle to sometimes see the value in them, whereas some of the other branding has done us very well. So we've created this image of little Simon and his dog walking through the village and a number of different things, and we've taken that. And the illustrations have actually saved us a lot, whereas previously we'd have to do photo shoots. We've got a local girl in the village who will draw these things up for us for a fraction of the cost of bringing photographers. Our old branding was like this, a generic label, pretty bog standard. We sold a lot, and we you know, it was very successful and worked well for us in supermarkets. We moved into Tesco's, Asda's, Safeway's as it was, and then Morrison's, Aldi, Lidl, Waitrose. And our branding now looks like this in supermarkets. It's probably a bit odd to be standing in a room full of very successful and highly acclaimed butchers to be talking about selling meat in supermarkets, but as a country butcher, it was the real way to grow the business. You can see the branding on pack, just how things go. We would sell 30 to 40,000 packs of that a week through the supermarkets. It would be the highest selling privately owned brand of bacon in Britain. Our black pudding would sell 2 million little boxes a year. We sell 1.5 million haggis between our retail and our food service business a year. You see some of the branding. That's my daughter Lynn and her husband James doing some of the advertising, some of the stuff in Mum's kitchen at home, and just the different aspects of our social media that we put out. This is Lynn again, getting roped into walking around the town, getting the Christmas leaflets out every year. She gets a cup of tea and a piece of cake for that. And these are the boys and girls at the factory. As I say, we've got a lot of people with over 25 years service. The business is over 30 years now, and we've got a few with 30, quite a lot with 25, and an awful lot with over 20. So we're pleased about that. I don't think any business that has a revolving door for people coming and going should be proud of that. We're keen to get our staff to understand that if there's something wrong with the business, tell us about it. Maybe we can do something. Can't always do it, but maybe we can. It's not a good thing when people are coming and going. Farming in Perthshire is an important part of our enterprise. We have a few strings to our bow, but one of them is farming. And as I say, I'm a farmer's son and have a great love for that, and my family do too. So we have 350 acres around the village where we grow grass, we have cattle, we bring sheep in for bed and breakfast, and we make a bit of hay and enjoy all the aspects of the farming life. It's a smaller part of our enterprise, but very, very enjoyable. So I was out rolling with the tractor one Sunday morning. I thought that was a quite a good image, the factory and the cattle at the side. We've got Highlanders, our ideas to, we're building a new steading next year, and our ideas to outwinter the cows, cross the indigenous Highlanders and Lings and Aberdeen Angus with continental bulls, and outwinter the cows and then bring the calves inside. One of my great strengths is my family, and I got the biggest decision of my life right, married the right woman at the age of 22, and whom I'd met when I was sweeping the street in front of my Perth butcher shop. So that shop's been good for me. And I've got two great kids. Lynn on the left has got married a couple of years ago. Her and her husband have produced an amazing little girl. And Ross on the right, he's just been engaged and is going to be married next year. So great news. So I thought I would share with you the most amazing thing in our group. This is baby Sophia, and she's a big star in the family, as you can imagine. In my private time out with work, I played the accordion since I was 7 years old, so I've enjoyed lots of foreign trips and lots of fun gigs with the band. One of my favourite tunes actually is a tune called Forbes Rayburn of Huntly, which was written by a friend of mine for the Rayburn's dad. So it's a very good tune, and I enjoy my music. This is some of it. That's enough of that. So that's the band, and you know, work's fine, but we need a bit of play as well in our life, so we're trying to keep a bit of balance, and the music, believe it or not, puts a lot of strain as well as a lot of fun, because some of the things we do are involve a bit of recording, and that doesn't matter how good your week is or bad your week has been, this is something you've got to switch off and apply yourself to, so it's very important. So that's what I do, ladies and gentlemen. It was a bit ad hoc, but I hope you've taken something out of that if I can do it, anyone can. I'm sure there's a lot of younger people in the audience who would be thinking, should I stick with the meat trade or should I not? And you know, I have a strong message for anyone, and I'd like to go around the schools and tell them, if they really realised how amazing the opportunity is in the meat trade for young people, at any level, you can go as big as you like, you can stay small, you can make a pound or you can make 2 pounds. It has a lot to offer if you're prepared to do a bit of work. And I don't think we have to kill ourselves with work. I'm not the hardest working person in this room, I can tell you. And I don't want to be. I want to be working smart, I want to be clever about it, and I want to get the balance right, otherwise you burn yourself out. So it's a great trade, and we're delighted and happy that we've got such a great federation, and the work that our people do on our behalf is very, very important. So thank you to the federation for having me here today. Much obliged.
Very much, Simon. Very interesting indeed. Obviously, being in Dundee, I've been very close to the development of Simon Haggie Butchers in Perth or Dunning, and I have to say it's quite impressive when you see it from an aerial photograph, so well done. We do have a little bit of spare time, so if anybody has any questions for either of these speakers so far, please feel free to ask them.
Simon, you mentioned two big events and how that changed your business altogether. There's a lot of young people in the room here for the training awards, so what advice would you give them as to how to be aware of those opportunities that come along and how to make the best of them?
Well, I think you've got to realise when it comes along that there's an opportunity in front of you. I don't think that you should plan too far ahead. I think you've got to something I use a lot is keep the rules clinic open, make sure that you decide these are the things I will do and these are the things I won't do. And if you keep doing the right things and, you know, really rigid about that, it's amazing how good things come along. If you have your own business, collect your debt, pay your bills on time, be punctual, you know, get the housekeeping right, and it's amazing how opportunities will come for you. The other thing that the guys have done a lot of, and I haven't done enough of, is learning journeys. Go and see places, come and see me, go and see people in this room, look and learn from people around about you, and most of it will be pretty obvious as when you see it. There are things that will come your way if you do the right thing.
Hopefully they come along then. Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Anyone else like it? Alan.
Thanks very much indeed, Douglas. Alan Clark, QMS. Ian, and a question for you, please. Really interested in what you're saying about your marketing activities and making sure you get a return on them. Very interested in what you're saying about the importance of being on, because on and off is very difficult. But you also said then that 40% of the Welsh population are now aware of your business in Conwy.